Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Okay, folks, how are you all doing out there? You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Monday podcast. Mixed bag today. We're doing both our sports. We have Mark as usual, Michael as usual, myself, and delighted to be joined by Kilmichael native, now a Cratlow club member, second longest serving intercounty football manager, Colm Collins, Clare football manager. You're very welcome, Colm.
And nothing won.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, from where you started, you're doing a fair job now. I think we'd all acknowledge that. We'll bang into the hurling early. Tony's going to join us and do the proper football. At Clarecastle, if I wouldn't be fit to talk to you about football.
There's only so much we can allow.
I guess.
I'm loving all the Clare in jokes already. Yeah. They're whistling overhead.
Well, it's about time we got a week where we got in some bit of, like, you know.
Big weekend for Clare this week. the double in the league in the first week of February. Massive victories over the weekend.
Yeah, we start there, Mark. The two lads behaved themselves anyway, didn't they?
Yeah, they're very, very well behaved, I'd say, Dale. Obviously, you were talking to both of them during the weekend, giving them a bit of advice about to shake hands before and afterwards, which never materialised, unfortunately. But yeah, they behaved themselves, and I suppose their two teams, I suppose, acquitted themselves well. But for, I suppose, the first day out for Brian Lowen in a real hotbed, I suppose, Anthony, after an ease into the league with an easy win in the first round. This was a big game for Brian Lowen as a new manager, number one, but I suppose taking his Clare team, a kind of a new-look Clare team in terms of the way the players are lining out, the likes of Conor Cleary full-back now, Pat O'Connor centre-back, and McInerney in the middle of the field, who seems to have released Tony Kelly to play his best. And I suppose the other big move is David Fitzgerald starting at centre-forward and got 3 points in play yesterday and was very forceful. And even late in the game, when Wexford looked like they were going to win the game, I think there was only a point in it, maybe with 15 minutes to go, there was a ball broke off of David Fitzgerald down to Tony Kelly and whipped it over the bat. A fantastic score when Wexford were doing all the pressing at the time.
Yeah, and Michael, there's probably too much written about it last week, wasn't there? I mean, it's two grown adults who don't get on. You know, shite happens. Get on with it, like, and they got on with it. There's no need for the theatrics.
We said there just before the microphones came on that this
did we?
This feud must be the most well publicised feud since the Hatfields and the McCoys in the Wild West. But yeah, look, I suppose they're two intelligent fellas who know they're bigger fish to fry down the line, as Mark was saying. You'd have to even know there's a nice spine coming together for Clare up the middle. And another thing we just touched on briefly, you know, we were talking the last couple of weeks about work rate and forwards and whatever, and there was an exhibition of it yesterday, Shane O'Donnell, when, you know, Clare were needing to dirty the ball coming out of Wexford, and, you know, the shift he put in. For a fella who could have coasted for years and 3 goals in all Ireland final, you'd have to say his attitude every time he goes out seems to be like, my place is in jeopardy, I have to show, and, you know, yesterday was no different.
Yeah, but he's a very genuine bloke, you know, that's the reality. And I suppose it was Davy Fitz actually picked him to get those 3 goals in the All-Ireland final against Cork and sprung him before anybody. I suppose that there was nobody really knew who he was at that moment in time. But he's, you know, after Conlon was sent off yesterday, like, Clare, you'd have to say, had a mountain to climb, because that field in Wexford, the wind blows straight down the field, and particularly in the second half, there wasn't a whole pile in it at half time. And to dig it out, the result was magnificent. But the forwards, it's key that your forwards work hard.
And look, you know, it was a funny game. I don't know how many times you'd get to play a Cullum in Wexford Park a bit, I suppose, over the years you would have. And
no.
Would you have been down to follow the lads, dog?
I've been there.
Wind is always a factor, yeah, nearly there.
But we've never played there. But it was a fantastic victory for Clare. I thought that, you know, some of the stuff they did was really top grade. They work great all over the pitch. They're obviously playing really well for Brian, like, you know, and long may it continue.
Yeah, what I would say there is, you know, on the 33rd minute, I think it was 7 points to 4. And Clare, in that 2 minutes and the 4 minutes of injury time tagged on 5 points.
Yeah.
You know, it was really the most productive period of the match for either side.
Yeah.
Wexford are right after half time, got 3 quick points. But those 5 points in 6 minutes, yeah. You know, without pushing to say we need a goal here, we need to be six up, yeah. They tagged on, and that's really what got them over the line.
And you'd often be a player or be a mentor on the sideline, and you know with the breeze that you have, you're kind of making it up in your head, we need to be 6 or 7 points up with that kind of a breeze. You'd know that's a 7 point breeze. When you're only 3 points up and time nearly up, you're kind of starting to question yourself and starting to worry. And, but like, that is a magnificent turnaround to get 5 points late in the game. And as you quite rightly said, didn't go for goals, just kept the scoreboard ticking over. But, you know, I suppose just mentioning Brian Lohan, and Dale, you'd have played with him, I'd have played against him. He was imperious as a fullback for Clare for probably 5 or 6 years. You know, I can remember the red helmet, no strap in it. You know, we were really in
awe. That was deliberate, the no strap.
Frightened fellas away from him.
No, it had to come off and the crowd give a bigger roar. Yes,
but like, I must say for 5 or 6 years, he was the farm hurler in the country, I suppose. Like, you know, and he was the most feared fullback at his time. And like, he's done a great job in the colleges scene as well, and now his first step into county management. And as Colm said, like the players, obviously a lot of those players now were young lads then and would have seen him, and I'd say they would be giving him 100% commitment. Like,
yeah, and just I suppose that is what one ex-mentor who was involved in maybe one of the last two management setups, he wasn't directly maybe involved, but he said to me that, no, I was saying, what about Lohan's appointment? And he said he might be just what the doctor ordered for this group.
Because, like, an unconscious, we're next to a man who's the second longest serving manager around. But you'd wonder at the change of culture that we say, I'm not sure what Jerry and Don would be like behind closed doors, but Brian was probably maybe slightly more forbidding even in image to these fellas. You look at Liam Cahill and Waterford and the bounce these fellas get because, you know, there's a new manager, but it's a completely new dynamic in the sense that maybe it's not so much of an arm around the shoulder and kind of, you know, show us what you have.
Yeah, I'd say Brian wouldn't be an arm around the shoulder guy. You perform or else, and that's it. And I'd say he's left them under no illusions about where they stand. But I think that, you know, sometimes a fresh manager like that with a completely different approach sometimes can give you a massive lift. And hopefully this can continue under Brian. But one thing for sure is that every fella that pulled on the Clare jersey this year will go to a wall for you, and that'll be coming from management, because he was, as Mark said, he was a fantastic player. I mean, he was incredible. Like, he was an incredible player, and as a fullback for Clare, he was Jesus. He any day we went out, he always performed, and he was one of those guys that you looked up to all the time. And I think that even the young fellas, their mothers and fathers, will tell him how good he was.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, there's gas, the two of them on the line together, okay, they don't get on. But, you know, Fitzy was, to me as well, was another kind of a real leader in that group. When we had it, you know, it wouldn't be really known maybe outside of it, but you're Fitzy running down, baiting the crossbar before the ball beats running to antagonise the tip crowd or the cock crowd.
Right, and, that's right, you know, that's right.
Just didn't care, just wanted Clare to win. And yeah, amazing to see them coming up against each other now, and that's just the way it is. I don't think Wexford would be too upset to have the first win up. And, like, what was for me, Mark, I thought they don't really have massive depth. Maybe Clare don't have it either in terms of Limerick depth or Tip depth, or maybe even Cork depth now. You know, Cork maybe might argue that against it, but, you know, when they're missing Lee Chin, missing Dermot O'Keefe, they're crucial decision makers for them. And I thought some of their decision making with the wind was off.
Yeah, they certainly took a couple of free pots of, we say, 70, 80 metres out, and with a strong crosswind there, they're difficult enough scores. Okay, we saw Mark Fenning get a massive score from, he's the goalkeeper, the line ball was played across the field and it went over the bar. But I think Jack O'Connor missed a couple of frees as well, like frees that you'd expect good inter-county players to get. And I suppose in general, Anthony, we all know that when you're on the opposition team and the team goes down a man, everybody kind of feels, ah, look, we're going to get over the line here. We're at home, turning with the breeze. And sometimes it's something that runs through the whole team, that everybody steps back a small little bit. And at this level, you have to be at it all the time. What I mean by being at it, you must be competing for every ball, because once one fella starts to, I'd always use the rotten apple theory in the box. Like, if one apple gets rotten, he'll rot four or five beside him. If one player starts to pull back from the action, it puts pressure on the four or five fellas all around him. So I think in general, once the sending off happened, I think Wexford might have said to them, said, look, we're okay, we'll see this one out, all right, we're turning with the breeze. And when that happens with the team, it seeps in, yeah. And when you take the foot off the pedal, it's very hard to put it back on the accelerator. So I think Wexford wanted to win that game. They're at home. They're Leinster champions. They're still climbing to get up there to get that recognition, get that respect of all the other counties. I thought that Clare came yesterday with one thing in mind, and I think they played for the 70 minutes plus, and they really had brought the fight to Wexford yesterday. And something may have been said in the dressing room, you know, in advance before the game. Lads, we're not coming out of here without a result.
Yeah. I'd say, look at trying to get a bit of info as impossible as we allude to every week here.
Yeah,
just one or two for us in. Clare are going to be up for this one. Like,
yeah.
Might have been leaking out from maybe, you know, someone to someone, and, you know.
Yeah, but I suppose
that was the vibe in training, yeah. You know.
But like Tony Kelly, I saw him as a minor, right? He played down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and I saw it a bit ago now, and he was the outstanding player as a minor. And for, I suppose, the last number of years, we haven't seen, you know, the real Tony Kelly, is what I would say. When he bust on the scene first, a bit like Conor Lehan, when he bust on the scene, he was magnificent. Now, he's had a busy schedule. His club has gone very well. He's in college in Limerick as well. They've gone well. And he's probably expected to carry the can now for Clare going forward. So I thought, we've only seen two league matches. I think the responsibility of the freeze from the management is the first thing to say, listen, you're our leader now going forward. And I think he's responded to that responsibility as well. Now, it's early days yet, but he is a very, very talented hurler. He's one of the exceptional ones that we have in the country at the moment.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, I was trying to think about what you'd compare it to. Would you compare it to a Hoggy with Cork or a Keane Lynch maybe with Limerick, so many of them, I suppose. But for me, it's very much like maybe like Austin Gleeson. Do you know that then, if Clare are going to go well, you're going to need TK hitting kind of the 8.5 out of 10 most days. I know he's not going to do it every day, but the odd day he will hit 9.5. And with Waterford, the Gleeson type player can be just the difference with you being nearly there or getting there.
And isn't it kind of similar that maybe Tony knows going to settle in midfield, and maybe there's still a question about Austin Gleeson, where do you put him to get the best out of him? It's funny looking at John McGrath Saturday night, the way he comes off centre forward, but he doesn't go too deep, whereas where Tony was playing centre forward, but he was coming in behind his own 45. And I'd say the other centre back, we leave him off, what can he do down there? But it's funny, by moving him further back to field, he seems to be playing further forward in general play. And I suppose maybe McInerney, is that the understanding McInerney holds and lets him go forward? And sure, look, that flick to dispossess
some skill.
The Wexford man made it look even better because he started looking around to see where the ball was. But
you kind of upset him for the rest of the game as well. They were niggling for the rest. It was suiting Clare then because they're trying to run down the clock.
Of course, because, you know, Lee Chin, no, obviously was a huge loss for Wexford. And you'd say leadership, decisions, talking to fellas, we say in the last 10 minutes, trying to get Wexford to kind of take the proper shots. But like Tony, led by example, you'd have to say. No, is he very vocal on the field? But certainly, if you were looking up 14 men, you saw him performing that way, it would only lift you.
Yeah, he was absolutely in that zone where every blade of grass, there was no job too big for him. The sending off, Mark. My own take on it was a harmless enough sending off, but it was a sending off under what we're told is the rule. I thought John Conlon didn't help himself. By his initial reaction, you need to be a little bit of an actor there straight away. You know, you get down over the corner back, and or the fullback was Liam Ryan, was it? I think you get down. You all right? You all right? Like put out the two hands. And I shouldn't have done it.
Put my hand in the cookie jar. In other words,
it was like actually, if you saw the fella playing rugby for Scotland, the fella who dropped the ball, and he was letting on that he scored the try, but the sub behind him had his two hands up. He gave it all away. Yeah.
Sub hanging him.
Yeah. I think the bottom line, and this isn't just a new phenomenon, we're hearing it for the last 2 or 3 years, Anthony, that once a hand or a hurley goes above the shoulder or hits and there's contact with the helmet, you're walking a thin line with the referee straight away. Some of the incidents are accidental, some are, I suppose, lazy, or maybe, you know, you go into a collision and you accidentally hit a fella. But in John's situation, you know, he was coming out, the ball, it was dropping, your man was dropping back, and it was lazy, you know, he put his hand up, like, and certainly looking at the television, there seemed to be some little bit of a jab on the face guard. You know, I don't think he gave the referee any opportunity. Like, if it was his arm was extended and, you know, the player maybe fell forward and there was no reaction with his helmet, I think he might have got away with it. But again, the hand was too high. I would go back to Damien Callahan a couple of times over the last number of years. He's got yellow cards for similar incidents. Just, no, they're big men. That's the only other side of it. They're 6 foot plus guys taking on a smaller guy, and, you know, with the 4 or 5 inches in the difference there. Sometimes those lads, the taller lads, are going to get caught with a high arm and stuff like that. But I don't think in the nuts and bolts, I don't think John could have any argument with the sending off.
I know there was a few highlighted, but just from that game, I thought Rory O'Connor was a little bit lucky as well with one that he flew in.
He did.
He was low, as opposed to what Conlon did was more silly, I thought. But Rory went in low, hard, and pulled at the same time. And got away with the yellow. But I suppose we have been told anything head height.
Yeah, and I suppose the only thing I would say in Rory's situation is that the Wexford player, that the Clare player had his holly down, so he was protected. He didn't get a welted holly off of his leg and stuff. I don't know if the holly was gone and he'd pulled and broke the holly off of his shin, I'd say maybe the referee might have taken a different view. But an old man, Jonas Scully, down our way, gave me advice when I was 12 years of age. He said, Mark, he said, your holly is not just for hurling. He said, it's all for protection. So I took that advice on board.
I thought you were going to go down some other road there for a second. Fair play, lads. I know, great stuff. Great start for Brian Lohan. I think, you know, that people in Clare even would be sitting up yesterday even, and they'd be delighted with all the results, fairness. But they'd be looking at that one saying, you know, that, okay, beating Carlo, you will... You know, you had to get it done and get it put to go on then and go down into Wexford and get a result. We had Limerick and Galway then, the Gaelic grounds, real attractive game, you know. And again, like, you're trying to predict these teams and we're not getting them until maybe Sunday morning now on the days. Again, Limerick, I think, you know, showing the depth that they have. I know Galway are missing lads, fellas like Di Burke and Johnny Cohn, a few fellas like that. They will all come back, you know.
Joseph Cooney.
But Johnny Glynn, Joseph Cooney, you don't know what's going to happen there, like last year. And it didn't really help last year either. But, like, you're looking at Limerick and you're saying the two Caseys, you know, Peter and Mikey, Kyle Hayes, and the three Patricks, well, lads then as well. Like, be able to not start them. I know some of them came on, like, but still, it was seamless enough and they win by 8 points, pulling up, really. You know?
Yes. Yeah, and I suppose, you know, and the big thing with the new National League is, I suppose, with the three so-called weaker teams involved, and they're split into two different groups, all the top-tier teams, shall we say, are confident enough that they're not going to end up down in the bottom of the table, so they're going to avoid relegation, whatever will happen. And, like, that is the pressure that was on inter-county player or inter-county management for the last number of years, is that they felt, oh, geez, the last thing we want to do is be relegated in Division 2. It hurts morale, but also hurts the pocket in terms of, we'll say, the attendances and stuff. Like, 10,000 people in the park on Saturday night, like, at 20 quid a skull, like, it's
14,000 at this one.
Like 42,000 people at Dublin and Kerry the week previous. So, like, the crowds, to be fair, are turning out and they are being treated to good games as well, good spectacles. So, but I suppose going back to the Limerick scenario, yes, to expand on the point about the panels, is that now it gives you the opportunity to play the 4 or 5 new fellas that you wanted to play. Whereas heretofore, managements were under pressure to pick maybe 13 or 14 of the starting 15 to actually make sure that they weren't in a relegation scenario. But yes, the strength and depth from a Limerick perspective is frightening. And Tipperary and, you know, Kilkenny, they're without the Ballyhale fellas at the moment as well. You know, they have a nice panel of players. But I think the new structure of the Munster Championship, having 4 games in 5 or 6 weeks, you need to be able to call on 22, 23 fellas that will fit into whatever line they're picked. So I think the league will be great for the top tier teams because they certainly will have tried plenty of fellas in the league.
And Cullum, just like what I've noticed, we've all noticed that John Kiley, when he's bringing in these guys, new, let's say relatively new, or trying something like a Barry Nash back as a halfback, which has been a big success for him, and will put pressure on that line. But he has kind of had two of the stable diet of the halfback line, of the fullback line, when he has popped someone in like Costello or Tom Condon. And again, up front during the Munster League, Darren O'Connell, but he always had, you know, Shemmy Flanagan with him or somebody else that has been around the scene now, third year, fourth year. Was that something you'd look to do? You're probably under more pressure turning new lads, especially this year as well. Like, you've lads back and you've great lads gone, obviously.
Yeah, I think that Kylie's strategy, a lot of managers use that strategy where if you're going to give a young fella a chance, give him a chance, put a scaffolding around him so that if he's getting a go on the half-back line that you have two regulars with him, or if he's in the full-back line, two regulars. We did it, I think it was a couple of years ago, we just, you know, we had to make a few changes, was it 3 or 4 years ago, and we just made one change in every line, deliberately, so that I think it's good. But I think Mark made a great point. I mean, this year's league, it really, the pressure is off. The pressure is so much off, so that you are going out now with an eye to the summer, rather than having to look on it as a win in itself. Now, obviously, as he discussed earlier on, the Clare team going down to Wexford was going down there for a win and no more about it. But I still think that this year's league is going to make it a lot easier for managers to try out players, try out different formations, and the pressure
is off. That something you envy, Colm, for the, are you do you just enjoy the league so much in football that even we had Gooch telling us last night, so this is why it's so good, because we don't know who can beat who on a given day, whereas in Championship,
I wouldn't mind if it was an odd year that you got
a bit of comfort.
Let the pressure off an odd year. But I mean, the thing about Division 2 football is that it's so competitive. I think there's nothing between any of the teams, and that every day you go out, it can go either way. Like, you know.
Well, you saw the league table last night. Like, you know, 8 teams, 3 points, then 6 teams and 2 points, and Roscommon, where my wife is from, down in the bottom, and they've probably played really good football in the last couple of days. 6 points up, I think, in both games, both league matches, and got held to a draw the first day and got beaten over the weekend.
That's right, yeah. So from that point of view, that like obviously Roscommon are a good side now. We're playing them next week, and you know, even though they're at the bottom at the table at the moment, I don't think that reflects anything, and it wouldn't surprise me at the end of the league if they were above at the top of the table, you know. But as I said, if the GA couldn't do something, that every 4 years you get a year off, it would be nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that mean you'll be around in 4 years time?
Absolutely not.
A rolling contract.
You could be here in Cork on a full-time basis. Well, yeah, I tell you, from the old Division 1 in the Hurling League, like, was with the Dubs, like, every day was pressure. Like, one of the days we ran away with some match. And I remember, it might have been Wexford in Parnell or something. And I went in and I said, thanks for that, lads. This is the first time for the last 20 minutes I was able to kind of chillax and talk away to Richie Stakelam and say, oh, we're grand, who'll we bring on? Every other day you were hurling every ball with them, you know. Yeah. So,
and like that is it. I think, I'd say, you know, I know Liam Sheedy and Tipperary have been beaten in the two matches so far, but I think there's no real pressure on him. And you know what he's done? He's given all the lads a good bit of game time. He's under no pressure to actually get a result. Once you don't finish in the bottom, you're okay. And I think, like, he's using that. Like, he's short-selling Noel McGrath, Dan McCormack, Brendan Mayer, you know, Bonner Mayer. Hopefully he'll be back. We see a bit more action now. Fair enough, he brought on Shamie Cannon and Bubbles, maybe looking at trying to get the win the other night, but won't be too disappointed. But coming back to the Limerick Galway game, one stat I saw Dale over the weekend, which I would be concerned if I was in the Galway camp, Cork and Tip, Cork at 40 shots in goal, Tip at 39, Limerick at 37, Galway had only 24 shots in goal. And like, at this level, if you're not getting up 30, between 30 and 35 shots in goal in every match, you're going to be in trouble, because you need to get scores as the year goes on.
But you know, I know, her just watching it, like, I thought that they tried to take on Limerick at their own game, Michael. I don't know if you felt that, but they went toe-to-toe in the middle with them and said, here we go, we'll take you on in the battle zone. And I think you try that with Limerick, you nearly always lose. They're savage in the middle. And then when they lost Joe Kenning, who was having a brilliant game, to be fair, like, then you know, a lot of their young lads haven't stuck up their hands now. They were missing Ty Cairn, who we spoke about last week, got the 6 points. Yeah. I'd like him to have seen him again. But I just felt that they came very deep with the half-forward line, you know, pushed out, tried to leave the space for Whelan, who did look dangerous. But you seldom come out on top with Limerick, I think, going at that game.
Yeah, because, I mean, and we've spoken about how certain teams suit other teams the way they're set up. And, I mean, Limerick have that so well organised. I say they welcome that if you take them on like that. is he's be wise after the event, but that whole thing in boxing where you get the other fella to do what he doesn't want to do. You know what I mean? That you don't let him play the game they're comfortable with. And like you touched on it there, I mean, Joe Canning, another injury, you know, I know the news is good this morning and they're optimistic, but he is still so central to everything that you'd have to, I know it's an old cliche, but you'd have to look at where's the leadership coming from other fellas. A lot of them are on the road arms as long as he is. I mean, Whelan is a great leader, a great warrior, but he's, what age is he, 23, 24? He's still has been a leader from 19, 20, but you would expect two or three more of them to be stepping up as well, especially, you know, that kind of game, you're away from home, things are going against you, Joe Canning goes off, and like you still will be looking around, see where are the leaders on that Galway
team. Without Dahi Burke and David Burke and Joseph Cooney, you know, they are three big physical strong men, centre back, centre field, maybe centre forward, wing forward, like they were a fierce last yesterday to Galway. And you know, Shane O'Neill, obviously new manager again, going into to Limerick yesterday to the Gaelic Grounds. I would have been hoping for a better performance, I would think, overall. But, you know, what you're seeing with Limerick at the moment is that every fellow who gets the ball around the midfield, he just takes one look left or right. And there seems to be players all the time making themselves available for the 30-yard stick pass, and then the next shot is into the full forward line. Or in, like Seamus Flanagan drifted out to the corner. It was a huge amount of ball that was played into both corners yesterday to get a one-on-one scenario. And
Gerard Hegarty steaming through the middle then. If you're not getting away the shot, there's going to be a third man runner.
But it's their skill level is fantastic, and their availability. And call it game plan, call it awareness, they have the best probably hurlers at this moment in time, and they're all playing really well, and their skill level is fantastic.
Yeah, Dara Donovan was man of the match, and if he didn't get it, Will O'Donoghue was getting it as far as I was concerned.
Correct.
And then you had Reedy, Tom Morrissey and Gerard Hegarty come back into that, and like you said, like, show me the team that can compete with this in a zone. I suppose there's one cameo moment, he'll always get great praise, he'll always be one of the greatest players of this era in hurling, was Joe Canning chasing Barry Nash back the field and taking the ball. The young buck.
Young bull and the old bull.
Canning, there's Canning behind me, like, says Barry, I'll see, we'll test out his pace here now. I tell you, Joe stretched out the legs. Yeah. And not alone did Barry bounce the ball as he soloed, which is probably not a help either, but in goes the hand. Canning takes it, pops it up the wheel and over the barrel. I tell you, the amount of underage coaches that'll be taking in their under 15s and 16s, says, hang on a minute here, who's the best player in the country? Might say TJ Reid, might say Patrick Horgan, might say Tony Kelly, might say Joe Canning, as easy as Keane Lynch, or any, you know, the top guys in every county, and say, this is Joe Canning, all the skills, all the touch, this, look at this.
He must like that stretch of the Gaelic Grounds, because remember a few years ago, he did a right Dixie on John Gardner, he just hand-passed the ball back, and Gardner was coming from, the ball was long gone, in the kind of backwards hand-pass.
Yeah, Mike, I tell you, there's one thing, that if you're going to do something special in Limerick, do it in front of the Mackey. You'll never get the same roar at the other side. But yeah, look, I suppose it's always going to be a tough one for Galway, Mark, as you said, down who they're down. It's just, I just think Limerick can be down whoever, and there's a next. It'll be hard to pick that 26 for championship.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the two midfielders there. Like, I mean, we'd all probably sit around here today and say, like, Keane Lynch is going to be the number one midfielder. Who's going to scrap it out for the second spot that's actually there? Yeah. Now, whether they're going to, is it who let's continue to play the way they're playing? Do they play Keane Lynch centre forward? I don't think so. Tom Morrissey is going to be the centre forward. Gerard Hegarty is going to be on one wing. Is it going to be a scrap for the other one, maybe?
Kyle Hayes,
yeah.
And David Reedy, he's hurling.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, and like Glenn rested again yesterday. You know, he's probably their inside man. Shamie Flanagan is putting up his hand now looking for... I was there a number of years ago.
Last year didn't go well for me,
didn't. And he's been given the opportunity now to stake a claim.
And they have this huge opportunity. And Cullum, it's more prevalent, I think, in the football that you finish with your best 15 on the field. It's not so much in hurling, I think. I don't see it as often, and you're not inclined to take off a lad who's been playing great stuff, even though he might be on the point of putting up his hand and say, I have no more to give, but they're not inclined to if you're having a great game. Football, I think that culture has changed a little bit.
Yeah, I think that Mick Bohan, the year that he was with us, Mick used to, you know, have this statement that he used to give to the players, the starting 15 and the finishing 15. And, you know, we used, while Mick was there, we always used 21. We always used the six subs, and it was something that the players embraced, and you know, it was good. It was very good for panel morale, You know, he never called them subs, he called them replacements and so on and so forth. He'd all, you know, and I think it's important. But in the case of teams like Limerick and Tipperary, they're going to have to play 20 players because how in the name of God do you want to keep these guys happy? Because they have serious, serious talent. How do you split? Like, you just take their midfield. How do you leave one of those guys out?
Yeah, like I suppose it's like all inter-county players want to play, don't they? You know, when you're involved and you're going through the hard work and the pressure and the, all that, the hard work and the Octobers, Novembers, Decembers, like, you know, in the gym and all that. And like, what are you doing it for? You're doing it for game time is what you're doing for, you know? Like, and we'll probably touch on Patrick Collins, the replacement goalkeeper, as we'll call him now. Like, he spent six years on the sideline. He's actually got 6 league matches over the 6 years. And there hasn't been a geek about him. Like, a goalkeeper is probably, the sub-goalkeeper, I should say, is probably the forgotten man in nearly every team. Like, you know,
there's a geek about him this morning, does
Oh, there? you can chalk that
we'll
down.
We'll touch on that, yeah.
Yeah, we will. It'll be a big talking point.
Thing, I mean, am I mistaken? But Nash was understudied to Donlaugh for...
And Donlaugh was understudied to Cunningham.
Yeah. And like Nash came on then, and he was there was a stage there that you almost thought Nash was unbeatable.
Yeah, well, like in Jock Cunningham's situation, he saw Jock Power, the King Power from Midland, who was a fantastic keeper. He didn't saw Tom Kingston, who was a very, very good keeper. And then Donlaugh came along, but and the big decision was Jimmy, I suppose, in 98, 99, make a decision to actually replace him. And Jock was still hurling very, very well. But just like it is a very, very difficult decision, I think, on any management when your number one keeper comes to a certain stage where there was a younger player underneath him, and when is the right time to actually blood him or make a decision to play him. So
I have to say the hardest thing in management, I don't know how you find the column, but the hardest thing I found in management was telling a fella he wasn't in the 26 that he didn't get to tog out. That's the bit I, you know, when we reduced it over costs, I think, God love us, as if everyone wasn't training, and if we reduced it from 30 to 26, it was desperate hard on players, I felt. I made it hard in management as well, telling the lads that weren't in it.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, that 26 thing is ridiculous. I mean, any inter-county squad is 30 plus, needs to be 30 plus. I can't understand what is the problem about listing 6, 32 players and picking from that. I mean, it's the most deflating thing to have to tell a young fella that he's not on the 26. And it's rubbish, absolute rubbish.
I suppose, and the other side of that didn't call him, and I know from on the day of the inter-county and the championship, you do want all those fellas tugged out, but I would then be speaking on behalf of, we'll say, club managements and mentors who are not allowed to get access to maybe the players from 26 to 32. And it isn't the same in every county, but it's in a lot of counties where inter-county managers won't release those players for league matches and stuff like that. And, you know, we've often seen down through the years where a guy would be training away with his county and play very little club matches, and he probably goes backwards a little bit without the matches, you know?
Yeah, I'm strong on that one as well, Mark. I think that the county management should be allowed to name 20, 21 players. Everybody else should play with their clubs. End of story.
And I'd love if that was the situation, but like we've played under previous managements, and in particular, I would say Donal O'Grady, who was involved with Cork when he first came in after the strike. There wasn't a player allowed to play a league match all year. I was in a conversation with Dennis Collin and myself and Donal and Sean O'Leary at the time in the panel, trying to negotiate on behalf of clubs to release players. And he gave us a statement afterwards in writing that you can have your players on the 4th of April once, and you can have them at the end of September when we're out of the All-Ireland final. And I mean, I just said, Dennis Collin said to me, I can remember him saying, like, are you saying that these players can play no match with their inter-county team? Or with their club team, and he said, yes, they're totally focused. And that was a good bit ago. So
that's when you were winning all Ireland.
We were competing for Umdela.
But no, like, I agree with you. Yeah. And it's just a pity with the time, and if the club match is on that morning, and you know, a fella's in the 26 and he doesn't get a run that afternoon, that's a missed opportunity for him. But it's a hard one then, isn't it?
That is a tricky one, and like a lot of the, we'd say, strength and conditioning behind the scenes, even if the match was on after it, Anthony, that night, you'd be saying, listen, okay, I talked out with the county during the day, I didn't get a match, can I play a match tonight? A lot of the whole psyche around the whole county scene. No, look, you're coming in, you were with us, you had your pre-match meal, you went through the whole process of the match and that stuff, and no, we're going for a meal after the match and wouldn't be allowed matches end that evening. So
I just wouldn't understand that bit.
And now for some players, they were quite happy to go along with that now, Anthony, as well. Would say that now. Like,
get the gear.
County
man.
Yeah, absolutely. You know.
I know. The last couple of weeks there, you were very solid, as was Michael, that I was going to really enjoy the surface in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, to bring my slippers, as John Mahon told us he wore. You didn't let us down on the pitch anyway, lads. I'm going to say that for you. You took you a while to get it right, but top class.
We have the stadium, we have the pitch, and out of the hurlers and footballers. We got the double as well over the weekend, Dale. Just to let you know that you know, hurling and football. It might have only been Division 3 football, but we
forgot about that. I'll let Cullum expand on Division 3 later on. I only do the top divisions in the football.
Okay, that's fair enough. I suppose, not to be tearing over all ground, I suppose. You know, the field was replaced at a huge expense, and now, as a spectacle on Saturday night, it was magnificent. Big crowd there, good game, lot of scores, very entertaining, and not a blade of grass was out of place. And, I suppose upwards and onwards now with the stadium.
And I suppose, Michael, they were listening to Mark over the last week there, because he called him out fairly strong last Monday, and honest, gave his opinion. But we did get a massive increase on the intensity, the tackling, the willingness to work from the forwards, and obviously the shooting completely improved when you put up 224.
Yeah, I'd say Mark's words are up in the dressing room. I know, but look, I mean, I think what Mark said, I don't think anyone would have argued with that, that Cork needed to improve, and in fairness they did. Seamus Harrandy chased the tip for the half across the field, got in a great block under the old covered stand as such, Patrick Horgan dispossessed. So like that was all better, and I mean, like we've said that last couple of Mondays that we've been here, that, you know, that's a basic requirement that fellas work hard. We mentioned Shane O'Donnell earlier, who gives an example of that every time he goes out in the field. So it shouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility that players can do it when it's put up to them. And Cork got the results. They probably just about deserved it, I suppose, on the night. Yeah,
I think they were the better team. I would have said that from the get go, and it's. It just has to be a non-negotiable going forward, like, hasn't it? This work rate, like, it's not just like one fella coming away now, chatting with lads, walking up the road there, up towards Parky Ring side of things in the rain. But people said, "What do you think?" And I said, "She's great, sure." But I said, "Last year you were very bad in the first round, and you beat Clare, and then it died off again." Like, so I said, "You need to, we'll know more 2 weeks time probably."
Yeah, well, you know, the what I was, and I will always use this as consistency. You know, you need to. And it's not about the result. It's actually being able to give a consistent performance that the lads that you put out in the field of play, they're going 100% at it. And what we saw in Waterford was a lack of consistency, a lack of desire, a lack of winning and wanting to win the 50-50 balls, the hard balls. Now, I will say this, you different stadiums, different fields. You know, Welsh Park is a way tighter field. Páirc Uí Chaoimh is a way more expensive, I would say. You know, there was a lot of good hurling play the other night. Like, there wasn't as much intensity in it, Anthony, as we saw in Wexford.
Sorry for cutting you there, Mark. Like, for me, it was like a summer game.
Correct.
And then yesterday, you saw 18-15 in Wexford in a complete dogfight. You saw Galway getting 14 points. Conditions had an awful lot to do with that.
And we saw
I'd have hated to be playing cornerback Saturday night.
Yeah.
The speed of the ball.
We saw in the Gaelic grounds, there was water coming up in certain parts of the pitch. Like, but it was an open game. But I thought in the overall context, Cork needed to win the game. They wanted to win it a little bit more, I think, than Tip wanted to win it. But we saw a few flashes of what is required from a Cork perspective if they want to go on and win something. And this is the point I make about winning something, is there needs to be a consistency of desire and willingness to work. Now, two fellas came into the forward line that we hadn't seen. Alan Cadigan scored 4 points in play. Robbie Flynn scored 1-3 from play and was fouled for a penalty. Like, you know, when you bring in two fellas like that, automatically you're saying to yourself, okay, there's a big improvement now on what we saw the previous week. And I suppose there was a number of other changes. Some of them were enforced, I suppose, because of the Fitzgibbon scenario that you have a lot of UCC lads involved. You know, they didn't start, but critical was the fullback and the centre back are still involved in Fitzgibbon in Robert Downey fullback and Tim O'Mahony at centre back. And I said Tim is a little bit unlucky on Saturday night because he played for Mary Eye the previous Wednesday and went to extra time in an absolute grueler of a match, like, you know. So he came off injured, but I think it's probably pointing, if you're reading between the lines, Cork are looking for a 3 and they're looking for a 6. Yeah. And they said, okay, well, we'll leave all those other Fitzgibbon fellas off, the likes of Darragh Fitzgibbon and Mark Coleman and Niall O'Leary and those, but we want to see our 3 and 6 and we want to see him against
Tim. Yeah, they were good. I know Tim Manny's day was cut short, but Rob Downey was very solid.
And we didn't mention him the first day against Waterford, and I didn't want to mention him because he's a young lad going into fullback and it's a big position. But I thought under the dropping ball against Waterford, he was excellent. And I thought he actually enhanced his reputation on Saturday night a good bit.
Yeah, in fairness now, and even, I know he lost the two lads. I thought Aidan Walsh had made a good start as well, and he lost them. But I know Huggy got man of the match. I'd have Alan Kerrigan very close to being man of the match. I don't know, it was a toss-up between them. But from Darragh Fitzgibbon's introduction to the finish of the match, God, what a game.
And it's funny, you know, that wasn't planned, obviously, and Kieran Kingston said it afterwards. But in a funny way, Cork had to kind of double down on speed with Fitzgibbon and Mark Coleman coming in. Robbie O'Flynn showing up so well that actually they really showed all the pace. And like Fitzgibbon, the way he was able to run it at Tipperary was a huge one. And obviously there'll be no criticism of Rob Downey, seeing as you're actually sitting in Blackpool. So I'm glad to see Glenn Overland finally get his due on the record up here, Anthony.
Yeah, like, I suppose the big look, it was a very, very pleasing performance. But, you know, the question is now for these players and management, how do we progress this now, right? How do we get, okay, we have Westmeath next, but you have two bigger games coming up, I suppose, the likes of Limerick. That's going to be a real test now, just to see exactly what we have. And, you know, I suppose I feel a little bit for Conallaghan. He didn't make the starting 15. He came on the other night, but from what I can gather, he's training extremely hard, but it's just not happening for him. Like, good players will always come back when they lose a bit of form and stuff like that.
I thought he worked hard on the command,
than the water of a scenario. But Anthony, for Cork to win anything, we need Conallaghan going at it for the full game. And that's the big thing for me, is that we now starting to build a pattern. And we mentioned Shane Kingston, who was probably our best forward against Waterford. So just very pleased with the performance now and the victory.
Yeah, fair play to the players and management. Was a good response. I don't think Liam Cahill, that's the beauty of being All-Ireland champions. you kind of can cozy along for a nice while, you know, but they still played a lot of hurling in that.
Yeah, like, I mean, the reality is they could have won quite easily. Patrick Collins had to produce a couple of very good saves. Bubbles' injury as well just broke their momentum when they might have been, you know, might have had the advantage.
I called Liam Sheedy Liam Cahill.
You mentioned Patrick Collins. He actually made two magnificent saves. The first one in particular, and he won't get a whole pile of it right, is that he saw the danger coming. He shot off his line to put John McGrath under pressure. And, like, no better boy than John McGrath now to be in a one-on-one scenario. And it hit off. I say his shoulder went over for a pint. So I think that was a critical one. But the other one from 6 or 7 yards out, and he went across his body to get the goal. And he changed his hands and made a great save. And he actually saved two more balls after that were handy enough. But you've seen other goalkeepers to fluff him and stuff like that. So he actually was involved 4 times in the last 8 or 9 minutes of the game. And when the game's coming down the line in the melting pot, I thought he stood up to be counted. And his puck outs were excellent as well.
That he found a headache for the management that you'd like as well.
Yeah, but the biggest question now is, are we going to give him a prolonged period of time in the league? So move on now to Westmeath. And then there's Limerick coming after that in Galway. I think after that performance, he's might have moved himself into the number one position.
Yeah, as opposed to the Galway lads, I would say Liam Sheedy would have taken in Mark Keogh's performance, Cian Darcy's performance. I was going to say Paddy Cadell's, but I don't know why they took him off. I don't think Paddy knew either. Is he?
Well, they said he has a back issue. And it niggled, but he was just after getting a point. And
he didn't look too happy when he came off. And on my monitor, you could get the monitor down to the sideline. Now, if you weren't sitting near it, you might notice it. But there was a lot of explaining going on to him. But I thought, you know, 2 points in wing back, and Keogh was really good. Jake Morris a little bit subdued, but we know how good he is. And I thought Darcy followed up his UL form. And then also on that, then you had Pádraig Maher contributing 3 points from centre back.
Yeah.
Rowan and Rock solid, like Dickie Dalton had a hard enough
start on him. Yeah.
And John McGrath, 4 from play again, from centre forward.
Again, like as you mentioned earlier on, a bit like a summer hurling game, Anthony. There was twas loose enough. Fellas were able to express themselves, and just striking on the night was excellent, both on the Cork side and on the Tipperary side. John McGrath is a beautiful hurler, and he's got great feet. In actual fact, and deceptively enough, like he has great balance, and he's able to move away at ease. But Padraig Malley, he had a couple of fantastic scores the other night. And I think in the overall context, I think both managers would probably be happy enough. But it just meant a little bit more for Cork to win the game, particularly after the Waterford game.
Yeah, that Galway tip match coming up now will be one to look forward to, I think, you know.
Yeah, but, will they throw in the younger lads again? Or will the likes of Brendan Maher and Dan McCormack be actually back? Will it be like we saw Christopher Joyce's name was on the panel for Cork after tearing his cruciate last year? Will we see Bonner Maher coming back? I hope we do, because, you know, a guy like him needs to get back into the fold with Tipperary.
Yeah, they were the big ones, guys, over the weekend. Really enjoyable games in different ways. The Saturday night, as I said, was the like championship stuff, and then was the real winter stuff in the other games, and ground out by Clare and ground out by Limerick very effectively. In the other ones, I suppose Kilkenny and Carlow getting a red card again after 8 minutes, it's just nearly impossible, isn't it, taking on them if you're going to go down to 14 men. The big thing there, Richie Hogan 1-3 from play, I think that's the one that we'd be looking at in the paper this morning. Waterford drove on again up in Westmead. Maybe Stephen Bennett getting 2-8 again.
Adding to his 13 or 14 points.
Following on
the previous Sunday.
Yeah, we'll watch them with real interest going forward with the start they've made. And again, I think Matty Kenny needed a result and a performance. And like after a great start, it was back to 1-7 each. And but they kicked on and they won by 7 points, so that's crucial for them.
And again, I suppose from the previous weekend, they conceded 2 goals, I think, in injury time the previous week, and conceded 2 goals in quick succession again against Dublin. But they put up a big score. They put up as a 2-17 or 2-18 against Dublin. So that was a very, very good performance for Laois. Like, and they will be trying to make sure that they're not on the bottom there. It would look like at the moment already that Carlow are probably going to end up at the bottom. They've had a best baptism of fire now coming up to Division 1.
Been tough. Be easier with 15 on the field for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Cork are out of the championship.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media. Every one of them wrote us off. There was a statement in the Cork Examiner last Saturday or last Friday that there are 4 men on the Limerick team that would be afraid to go into a dark room. There's the answer today to those 4 men given.
And you're that hurt by those remarks?
And certainly I'm hurt. And the players were more hurt. And they're the ones who were insulted this week. And they proved it today that they have this.
So the two Cork hurling legends have departed the scene. And we're joined with the Kerry legend, Mr. Tony Lean, here. In the studio here to talk about the big ball, the bag of wind, as it's affectionately known as in Clarecastle. And, you know, it's great to have you here, Cullum, as we touched on in the hurling section. I mean, what a win yesterday, and unlucky the first day in Westmead, and what a Division 2 is. I know we touched on it in the hurling as well, but every game, as you said earlier, you have to go to Roscommon next. They're bottom of the table, but they could as easily be top of the table.
They could, yeah. I mean, Roscommon have an excellent side. It's great competitive, very competitive. So, but you wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, you know, when you were down the divisions, you'd have an odd game where you'd be saying, yeah, we'll win that, you know.
Yeah.
But you can't really say that about any of these games. You've got to just do your best every day you go out. I suppose one of the interesting things in our two games was that the referee in... And I'm not criticising them in any way, but the referee in the Westmeath game, he stopped play exactly on the... So there was 70 minutes plus 5, stopped it exactly at 75, even though that there was time wasted in that 5 minutes. Whereas yesterday's referee allowed all the time wasting and played 2 extra minutes onto the injury time. So it was just in two weeks, different interpretations of what way it should be done.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm actually, Colin, just talking about? I mean, and in fairness, Dale, people did flag in advance of the league that Division 2 and Division 3 were obviously the most relevant and significant in terms of what would happen later. But you just even look at Division 2 after two rounds, thinking, oh, it's unbelievably topsy-turvy. Like, after the first round, Cavan were done. Everybody has written their obituary off. They were done. Oh, they've lost a load of players. They were in huge trouble. Westmeath were like, oh, what a result against Clare. And now they were going to be Fermanagh doing it again. Like, it is literally, I mean, was it who said it last night? I think it was Gooch actually said it last night in television. If you could be guaranteed one thing from the national leagues, it's that Division 2 in the football column will go down to the last day. You know, in terms of who'll go up and who'll go down. And the significance. Now, I don't think, like, obviously Roscommon are bottom at the moment. I don't think they're going to go down. I mean, but obviously if Clare went up now to the Hyde next Sunday, you'd be talking about it. But think about this, Dalo. Roscommon, like a Super 8 team, if they went down to Division 3, the way the championship is in Connacht this year, they've London in the first round. And then they most likely, and I say this with due deference now to, I think it's Sligo, they most likely Mayo in a Connacht semi-final. So given that you have to get to a Connacht final if you are relegated, Roscommon could actually, Cullum, end up facing Mayo to stay in Tier 1 football.
Yeah.
Could. I'm not saying it will, but could.
I suppose we spoke about this earlier. I think that the Tier 2 football thing, you know, you'll get there, and I could beat my words at the end of the year, but you'll get there on merit. And I think that people just have to end up embracing it. And if you end up in Tier 2, that's where you deserve to be, and no more about it. And, you know, the Roscommons and Clares and all this have plenty of opportunity now at this point to avoid that if that's what they want to do. Mm. But I don't think once the chips fall that there can be anybody complaining.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not a bad thing. I mean, if you're in Tier 2 and you win it, surely that's something that you can build on for the following year.
Yeah.
But I think that we've got to stop. But this will only happen over time. Stop looking at Tier 2 as if it is a dumping ground and look on it as a genuine challenge.
Oh, I'd agree with you, but an awful lot of people wouldn't.
I know, that seems to be the predominant view out there, like, you know, that it's... But, you know, at this point in time, everybody has an opportunity, and it's a level playing pitch.
Yeah.
Where you end up is where you deserve to be.
I mean, genuine question, how much pressure did you or the players feel ahead of yesterday's game? And that's why what Dalo was saying, like, I genuinely, looking at the four divisions yesterday, I really think Clare's win was the result of the weekend. But you would have known, Cullum, you were 0-4 and lost at home going to Roscommon next Sunday. So, like, there must have been some pressure on yesterday.
Well, I think that Division 2 is... We've been in this sport before, and so there's... Like, we've pretty much nailed what the way to play this, and that is that each game we forget about promotion, forget about relegation, forget about every game we've got in the future. The only game that we give a damn about is the game we're playing. Mm. And we do a recce on the opposition, we go over what we need to go over ourselves, and we try, in that, the week between games, try to get the max we can out of the group. And that's all you can do. And... You know, if we had got beaten by Kildare the last day, which, you know, it was touch and go, we'd have to face into Roscommon and try and get a result in Roscommon. Mm. But we're taking it one game at a time and see what we can get out of each one. That's all it's about.
And Colm, just a quickie, throwing in just a general thing, I suppose it mightn't be even football specific in any way. Just, you're the second most experienced manager in Ireland, let's say. Like, you to deal with the, for a young manager, for a fellow who's in his first or second year and he's coming along and trying to make an impression, an ex-player maybe or whatever, like, he loses two of his best players. And I would akin it maybe to losing Sean McMahon and Niall Gilligan off our hurling team around 97-98, like, losing Gary and Jamie, like, and, but you don't seem to have, you know, you've just moved on as if, you know, they're not available, so we move on.
Well, I suppose that our job is to get the most we can out of the players that are at our disposal. And our job is not to be bitching and complaining about who we don't have. Like, the only players I'll talk about is the players we have in. And I think we've got plenty decent players to be successful. I don't have any problem with the fact. And, like, you know, everybody was going on about who we were missing. But nobody was taken in. You know, when we went up to Meath last year, we went up to Meath without Kieran Russell, without Keelan Sexton, without Pierce Lillis, and without Dermot Coughlin. Now, all of those are key players. Mm. You've got, there's our 6, our 8, our 11, and our 12. They're all key players that we have back. So plus the fact that there are some excellent young fellas coming through. So, you know, I wouldn't at any given time, I mean, any of your main players could, God forbid, break a leg or do a cruciate or whatever it is. So you just get on with it. And as I said, our job is to get the most we can out of what's at our disposal.
Honest question again. Says you honest, it's highly dishonest question. Which is more important to you? Staying in Division 2 or promoting or whatever, the National League or the Championship?
I think that in the context of what we have in Clare, I think it's very important that we stay in Division 2. There are some excellent young fellas coming through. There's serious talent coming along the line.
Is there, yeah?
And I think it's very important for them that we're playing at a high level. But I suppose from my own point of view, I'd dearly love to win a Munster Championship. Mm. I think, you know, it's a long, long time since 92. And I mean, that's also very important. I suppose, in general, Tony, I think there's that's what I said a while ago. Getting the most out of those players is the most important thing.
Mm.
And like, while, you know, I can see pluses and minuses, I suppose for the future, I suppose that staying in Division 2 is so important for the kids coming through.
But I bet you still have a circle around the 9th of May because, absolutely, like, as Dalo often slags, myself and Dalo are always talking, it just seemed for the last number of years that the Clare and the Kerry ball were stuck together coming out of the hat.
It was even when he drew them out himself 2 years
that's
ago.
Right. I mean, I even did it myself.
Stop. It's ridiculous. How many years in a row? It seems like that every year.
Yeah.
You're playing Kerry.
Kerry.
And which year was it? I remember being at a club game here in Cork. I'd say it was above on the north side, because I remember I was on my phone the year Dunica Walsh got sent off. Like, Kerry, that was only, what, 2015, 16?
Yeah, we had a tremendous opportunity.
I was just going to say, like, I mean, and I think Kerry were against the wind in the second half.
Yeah, that was one we let go. We should have won that match. But you know, you only win at the final whistle, and there's no point in talking, and it's history now, but it was one that got away, definitely.
But the reason I said about May the 9th is Clare are away to Tip in Thurles. Cork and Kerry are playing a fortnight later, and it's the other side of the draw now. And am I right in saying that puts you into a semi, doesn't it, against Waterford or Limerick?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so in terms of targets for the group, and in terms of even what it's doing for you at the moment, Colm, I suppose that's my question. Is there even a kind of a bit of a twinkle in the eye about May and June, and hey, we could be looking at a Munster final here?
I mean, I'm not giving the party line here now, and I'm not churning out the same, but really, all that we're looking for as a group is that game against Roscommon now. And I mean it so sincerely. Like, nobody has even mentioned Tip. I suppose out of the corner of your eye, you'd be watching their team and watching the results and so on and so forth. But really, all the focus now is on Roscommon and nothing else. And it's the only way you can be. Because take your eye off the ball and start looking down the road for 1 second, and that's a surefire way to get a kick up behind.
And you get bitten on the ass, and all of a sudden, when you start looking at the tables, then you start forgetting about Championship,
that's
don't
right,
you?
Chef.
Tell me a quick question. I was in Tralee on Saturday night, lads, for the Kerry Galway game, and I mean, I'm straight out, like, I think the advance mark, I don't like it. Cullum, you may have a completely different opinion, but I actually think that the sin bin is a great idea. Now, I know I'm hearing the hurling lads talking about, oh, not a hope, and they were on last night, and I'm kind of going, I don't get that, but that's a different debate. But the material difference already, Cullum, that the sin bin can have in a game, and it literally, it decided Kerry Galway for me. Killian McDade got a black card, 63 minutes Dalo into the game, should have been back in on 73 minutes, at which time Kerry had just equalised, and the score was there, but he couldn't get back on the pitch. I didn't realise that you have to wait for a stoppage in play or a ball to go out for the player to get back in. He never got back in. Killian Spillane, you probably saw on TV last night, was an overlap, got the winning point, and it cost him. I mean, do you think that the sin binning in football is a good thing, first off?
Sin binning is fantastic. Yeah. It's a great rule. The old sin bin rule was a joke, an absolute joke. You had teams like Dublin, who had somebody binned and brought on a stronger...
You mean the old black card thing, yeah.
A stronger player they brought on. It actually helped them. So this sin bin rule is excellent, top class. As for the advance mark, mother of God, what is wrong with people?
catching a handy ball inside.
I mean, what skill is there in catching a ball into your stomach? I could do that myself. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, if they're going to have it, and I don't believe, like, we're the greatest crowd to pick up stupid things from other sports and not pick up. The one thing that we should pick up from other sports is the bloody clock.
Yeah.
Take the clock out of the hands of the referees. God knows they have enough to do. Take that out. But this advance mark is an absolute joke. And anything, if they're going to retain it, at least make it for a catch over your head.
Right.
But there was a ridiculous situation against, I think it was Kildare and Armagh, or Kildare and Fermanagh.
Yeah.
Where the Kildare player had the ball on the right-hand side of the pitch, just outside the 45-metre line. And he kicked it 20 metres laterally, about 2 metres inside the 45 for a mark.
I know.
Mother of God almighty. But who brought these rules in?
And, I mean, I'm guessing here, because I probably should have researched the explanation more, to try to give the rule makers some benefit here. I'm presuming it was the idea is, well, it'll stop teams defending en masse. You know what I mean? That actually, if you can actually get a ball, you can get a guy free, you can get a guy in space, you can pop it into him, then it actually helps in that regard. But I'm failing to see, other than trying, as you said, other than trying to ape the AFL, I am failing to see how it helps the game in terms of continuity, spontaneity, skill set. It doesn't do anything for... And by the way, you're talking about the one column that's just inside the 45. We haven't seen the bedlam yet that the one is going to cause when there's one piked into 15 fellas in the edge of the square and Tommy Walsh, as they tried that near the end, goes up and actually wins it. And then you're meant to leave him alone for 4 seconds. Meanwhile, he's sticking it in the bottom of the net. What's going on there?
Well, it's ridiculous. And then you can't have two of them in a row. Mother of God, talking about making the referee's job hard. Like.
Yeah.
But there is absolutely no skill into catching a football into your stomach or into your chest. Mm. Nothing. It's the most basic thing that you could possibly do. But why they... Like, there are so many good rules that we could steal off of basketball, off of the Aussie rules, off of the ladies' football and so on. And we picked this. Oh, God, it's just mind-blowing. Like, why can't we do, like, basketball? Like, have a shot clock?
Mm.
Why can't we do limited amount of people inside the 45? Mm. Straight off. I mean, if you look at the football games all weekend, every team now is at it. Every team is getting... You've numerous... This isn't just one team anymore.
I'm looking forward to popping up to an old club game now when the championship gets going up in Cork-Clare or something.
That'll be mayhem there.
It'll be absolute mayhem if all this is in place.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is in place for the club. Usually, in fairness to them, they trial something in the league and then come April or May, they're saying, no, that was a catastrophe. But it's actually in for the year.
That was the advance mark was trial last year.
Yeah.
And I thought it was clear as day. It was not a success and good luck. I thought it was gone.
Yeah.
The next thing it's in. But
just moving on, I know the way you always, you know, Clare lads, especially in West Clare, look down across into Tarbert and they kind of be keeping an eye on what's going on down in North Kerry. But I was watching Galway Cullum Saturday night and I just, even talking to Patrick Joyce afterwards, Dalo, I got a real sense of freshness about him. And obviously John Dively is a buddy of ours here, writes for the paper, and I met Divo for a coffee on the Saturday, and you know he was going through the team with me, and he was kind of going, "This guy's new, and yeah, this guy is, and we're trying this guy." And in my head, I was kind of looking at it and saying, "I think Kerry will win handy here tonight." You know, Galway were a bit off. Jesus, I mean, they played beautiful brand of football. They moved the ball really, really well. So I'll make a comment to you. You know the way we do the power rankings, Dale, or Dublin 1, Kerry 2. Are Galway the number 3 side, Cullum, in the country at the minute?
Well, at the moment, I think that they have the most potential. Mm. I think that Galway are going back to playing the football that is natural. I know this makes no sense whatsoever, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think that there are certain counties that a style of football that's associated with that county. And I think Galway were always a county that played really good football and played attacking football. And I think an overemphasis on defence was alien to them. Now, there's nobody saying that they should abandon defence, but like, let the shackles go and let these players play. And like anybody that knows Galway football inside knows that they have serious forwards. It's not just the six that start in Tralee. They have six more.
They
have serious offensive talent. And, you know, I think if they keep going the way they're going, I think Padraig Joyce, of course, is a breath of fresh air in the sense that... you know, he tells it as it is.
And he does, doesn't he?
And, you know, Padraig Joyce is for playing football the way he played it. And long may it continue.
Yeah, because, you know, Divo was saying, like, you know, what are you going to do with Clifford? You know, because obviously, you know, most teams know nearly defensively putting their game plan around David Clifford. And he says, we're going to throw Sean Mulcairn on him. And I was kind of, what else are you doing? Well, I said, no, that's it. That we're going to give him a go, like, you know.
Well, from remembering as players, like, obviously there were two different players, but you'd say PJ would know other way, would he? He just was all flair, all look, give it to me, I'll make it happen.
Yeah.
And I think he would. And I would I be right in saying their Cora Finn guys all have to come back yet?
One, they brought back in Ronan Steed because they needed him. They were short in midfield. The last night, but like, I think Padraig says to us afterwards, and it was interesting even the way he said it. Now, I mean, maybe I was reading too much into it. He was kind of saying, we were asking him, he says, yeah, no, I spoke to the Cora Finn lads last Monday night, no, he says, and two or three of them are injured and five of them are taking a rest. So he says, that's the story there. And I got the sense almost that he was kind of saying, listen, you know, my patience won't last forever with that. No, obviously the Cora Finn lads will be the best judge of them, but how many, Cullum, do you feel in a strong as Galway team? I mean, who would you be locking in from Cora Finn? You'd be locking in Liam Silk, obviously.
Ian Burke
are the main two.
Ian Burke, definitely. After that, the rest of them, I think, would have to fight for their place, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Farrahers, you know, whatever, like Ronan Steed, maybe.
Lundy Farrar. Maybe. Like, the thing is, it's you know, people look at the Cora Finn. I think the Cora Finn success story is more about a culture and a professionalism that is any club in the country in ways can have a lot of what Cora Finn are doing. They're incredible behind the scenes work there, incredible, nothing is left to chance, nothing. And then they have decent players, obviously, of course. But I don't think there's, I think that the unit in Cora Finn is what it's about, as opposed to the individual. And I don't think there's, on any given day, there's many of them, you know, would be guaranteed a starting role. I'm not saying that they wouldn't get a starting. Of course, you know, these are all very good footballers. But none of them, you know, for me, Ian Burke, I would have him on any day. I mean, that guy just knows the right thing to do. He's instinctively. Class, yeah. Instinctively. He would be there. Steed, of course. What do you call
Liam
him?
Silk. Great bit of
Silk,
stuff, yeah.
Silk. But after that,
the keeper, maybe. Keeper,
well, they seem to have solved their keeper problem.
Is Conor Gleeson led?
The guy that played the last day, he was excellent.
Yeah.
And so I think that might be solved.
Well, if Dahi Burke threw in his lot with football for a year, would he make that level? He would.
I'd say he nearly would. But I mean, he's at that level. There's no doubt about it.
He's excellent.
The guy, Dalo, who'd usually be sitting where you're sitting is Mike Quirk. And in fairness to Mike, we had a chat a couple of weeks ago. And he was really humming and hawing, lads. And this is interesting, Cullum, for you as a manager now. And like, Quirk could be, you know, a good buddy of ours now at this stage. And he was like, I don't know about the podcast. And it just got to the week of the first game. And he was kind of saying, like, you know what? Like, this is too important to me. I can't be doing podcast. Even if I'm not talking about Laois, I need my entire focus to be. And this was the week before the Roscommon. And I was kind of saying to myself, you know, I really hope, no, for his sake, like, they, you know, they don't get tanked, because going away to Roscommon in the first game was a tough ask. Now all of a sudden, Dalo, two games in and he's top of the league.
He's looking up.
We're delighted for the big dog.
Yeah. Well, one thing about him is that from reading his articles in the Examiner, it's quite apparent that, number one, he's extremely knowledgeable about football, and wherever he was going to go, he was going to make a success of it. A lot of his views would be, they're common sense, they're well grounded,
progressive, yeah.
And he's obviously, he knows football inside out, and I just think that Laois are lucky to get somebody as good as him, and I think that it's nice to see somebody like that doing well.
And he said,
no, that's until they meet Clare now.
Yeah, he said to me, the other night the exact same thing, and in actual fact, I actually think he said it in the paper today, because they lost Stephen Attridge, they lost the Kingstons, and he basically said after Saturday night, I'm more interested, lads, in talking about the fellas that are here. The fellas, we actually, people are so focused on the Kingstons going and losing their fullback, and but he was saying, I don't think people have actually overlooked the fact that we have some serious footballers here in Laois. And as you said, to beat Armagh, having gone to Roscommon, I know I'm going to put the absolute hex on him now by saying this, but they're at home to Cavan next weekend. And if they can beat Cavan 5 points out of six, suddenly then, Cullum, you know, you're looking
at the top end of the table then, yeah. You're looking at the top end. But, like, even from his articles, it's quite obvious that he's a deep knowledge of football, and in my opinion, he's thinking the right way about what way it should be played, and he's thinking the right way tactically and so on and so forth. So it's no surprise to me he's doing well. All right.
Okay, guys, great stuff. We probably went on longer than we meant, but it was great fun. It's great fun.
Thanks, lads.
And remember, folks, as always, you can listen to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or irishexaminer.com/podcast. And don't forget to leave us an old little review or a comment. You can tell us where we can improve or what we're doing okay. Cheers.
Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.